gets a touch.
But he helps out.
DeMarcus Cousins nearly brought down the backboard and rim.
You're now listening to the King's Court Podcast, presented by SackKingsNation.com.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the King's Court Podcast. I'm your host, Vince Miracle, and joining me today is very special guest. He's host of one of the Almighty Baller Podcasting Network shows, Ode to Odin. I hope I pronounced that right. He is the host of his own show. His name is the
Ode to Odin. Yeah.
Ode to Odin, Sean Darenthal. Sean, how are you?
Good, Vince. Thanks for having me on, man.
Hey, I apologize. We were supposed to do the show last week, but see what happened was something happened where I got called into work, and then, I kind of spaced on it. So I apologize about that, but I'm definitely excited to have you on, and I appreciate you working your schedule to come on the show.
Well, no worries. I'm actually excited to be here, too, just because the Kings draft situation is super interesting. Obviously, having, a draft podcast and just thinking about that niche all the time. I spend a lot of time looking at lottery odds, kind of like the tanking ranks, if you will, kind of the upside down standings. And obviously, you guys are sitting at 6-7 right now, and there's the top three protection of the New Orleans, and you guys are probably trending down, whereas New Orleans, you'd expect maybe to start trending up a little bit. Maybe not, though. I don't know. It's just a really interesting situation. Having two top 10 picks is obviously rare, so it's an interesting situation to talk about.
Well, you brought up your show, and for those who don't know a little bit about it, Ode to Odin, like you said, you talk about the draft, you talk about certain prospects that are in there. Can you kind of give a more brief description about what you do on your show on a week-to-week basis and what kind of guests you've had on your show and how long you guys have been kind of podcasting for, or at least you yourself?
Yeah, so I started it about, it's been a little over a year and a half now. I wasn't very frequent at the beginning, and have kind of slowly ramped up the frequency of it. But basically, I started this because there's a certain kind of draft analysis that I was always very interested in, particularly in the high school guys coming up, future years. I wanted to get excited about those guys. I want to get familiar with those guys. And then also, I wanted to kind of track guys throughout the beginning years of their NBA and see which skills like really developed. We talk about guys like, he would be great if he could only get a jumper or whatever. You hear a ton of analytic cliches when it comes to draft time. And I was just so interested in what actually matters. Like I wanted some real substance in the analysis, and there wasn't at that time a good NBA draft podcast. So I said, why don't I just start my own? And so basically what I do is I bring on a guest. I've had on several guys from Draft Express, a few guys from The Step Back. One of them is actually on our network. Coles Wicker is a great guest. My most recent one was Chris Stone. Actually, really, really good conversation. You'll check that one out, my latest podcast. But basically, we talk about a few like draft philosophy ideas. Like we'll talk about how they like to scout players, what attributes they like more than others. We talk about draft slot importance. We talk about like real expectations for drafting outside of top five, or if you have the third overall pick, what are the real expectations for that? And then we go really, really in depth. Like we'll take four prospects and completely break down offensive strengths, offensive weaknesses, defensive strength, defensive weaknesses, that kind of thing, and project them to the NBA. So it's more it's more in depth. I'd like to think that we're trying to battle a lot of the cliches and that kind of thing that exists in like the mainstream draft media right now. And we try to get a little smarter. I mean, I don't want to sound condescending and I don't want to sound presumptive or anything, but that's kind of the goal. Now, if we reach it, that's up to the listener or not, but that's kind of the goal of it.
Well, I want to jump right into the draft because March Madness is rapidly approaching. I mean, just earlier today, I was grabbing lunch and I was watching the TV, and I believe Duke and Clemson were playing. And I wasn't really into the game, mainly just due to the fact it's not March Madness yet. It's like the preliminaries up to it, which it's fine. Yeah. But, it doesn't have that intensity that I like seeing on the TV. It doesn't have the crowd. Like when you go to a lunches when March Madness is going on, let's say it's a Buffalo Wild Wings or just your local your local bar, there's a lot of like college heads in there. And I love getting into conversation with those guys. I mean, last year I got into the Buffalo Wild Wings actually had a college bracket, and I got into this big one at the bar over there, and that was just a lot of fun. So I'm super excited about that. But there's some guys in this draft that are blowing people's minds away. I mean, this draft is already being proclaimed one of the best drafts in the last, 15 years. So if you have the number one pick, and it looks like it might be going to the Brooklyn Nets, a.k.a. the Boston Celtics, who are you taking with that pick? Because, I mean, there's a lot of question marks going on right now with the Boston Celtics, because I think this is pretty interesting. They have Marcus Smart. They have Isaiah Thomas. And it seems like that is the direction they're going to continue to go in, especially with a guy like Avery Bradley and Terry Rozier on their roster. But the two top prospects in this draft are point guards, and unless you want to bring in the conversation of Josh Jackson or Jonathan Isaac or even a Jason Tatum, who I don't think is up at that level yet for a number one or two.
Yeah.
But Fultz and Ball, point guards, shooting guards at best, but mainly focused on as point guards. Do you think that they have to go one and two? And do you think the Boston has to choose between the two of these guys? Or do you think now, because of Boston's situation, that they may be looking to trade that pick?
Sorry, you cut out there just a little bit, but yeah, I think Boston definitely takes Fultz. I think anybody who gets the number one pick, regardless of who you have right now, you take Markelle Fultz. I think that he's in a tier kind of by himself above Lonzo Ball. And I think the Celtics have kind of been pulling a fast one. Danny Ainge has been kind of pulling a fast one on everybody, kind of feeling out all of these trades and seeing if he could rob anybody blind like he did the Nets for these picks, and kind of saying, yeah, we have all these good players now. Let's use some of these draft picks, these assets, and trade for a star, you know, that kind of thing. We're in win now mode. But I think they're so set up with these Nets picks over the next 3 years that if they just stick with it and they hold out, they'll be fine now. I mean, you know, obviously there's the hurdle for everybody, the giant great wall actually for everybody that is the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I think he's kind of just biding his time, being good now, and then just kind of building for the future as well. Markelle Fultz is definitely the pick here. I don't care if you have Isaiah Thomas. It doesn't matter. Markelle Fultz, he can definitely play with Isaiah Thomas. I don't think that'll be a problem. Isaiah Thomas is actually pretty good off the ball too. He plays a lot of times with two other point guards, right? So yeah, definitely Fultz is the guy there. And if they get the number two pick, then it becomes, I think, more of a debate between Josh Jackson and Lonzo Ball. But again, I don't think if they take Ball there at the number two pick, I don't think that's the wrong pick either.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Ball, because I've been excited to talk about him with somebody, and not even about his play. Honestly, I want to talk about his dad. I want to know, because this is my mindset on it all, because there's already the growing speculation that because of how LaVar Ball talks about his son Lonzo, that it's going to start deteriorating his draft stock. And whether people believe in draft stock or not, once the draft really comes, people just look at the play and what they can do during their workouts and stuff. But at this time right now, I mean, do you think the way that LaVar Ball is talking about his son, he's better than Steph Curry, switch the two teams and see who is better. Like, do you think that's actually hurting his draft stock right now, even though his play has actually been pretty good?
No. It's interesting, right? He's a character. He's funny, obviously. I don't have any inside information about this whatsoever. But my impression of it is that their dad is kind of a character. These guys have been in the spotlight for a long time. They've been celebrities for a long time. And I think their dad had some interest in some company. It's either his brand, or maybe he has like a controlling part of this like player company or something like that. And so I think a lot of this is just kind of like promotion, you know, boxing style promotion, you know, just be loud, get your name out there. He does a lot of interviews now. And I mean, why would you have him on, you know, if not just for pure entertainment's sake? Obviously he's no expert in anything. Yeah, I don't think it's going to hurt him at all. If it hasn't hurt him yet, I mean, his dad's been loud, I'm sure, his whole life, definitely through his senior year in high school when they were the number one team in the country, and definitely all season at UCLA. Starting to ramp up, I think, a little bit more lately, or at least getting more publicity lately. But I think he's been crazy probably his whole life. So I probably think he's pretty used to it by now.
I mean, the fact that he's attacking Charles Barkley now, and he went after a two-time MVP Steph.
Right? Who hasn't been attacking Charles Barkley?
I mean, I guess that's true, but come on. You guys are taking away from my favorite beef, and no one's talking about it enough, and that's Shaq and JaVale. And it's all because LaVar Ball keeps talking. Stop talking so I can focus on JaVale McGee crying. Man. But let's go ahead and move on to the Kings. I don't have you here for too long. And like you said on the top of the show, the Kings drafting situation is so funny to me. I mean, you can see it. They're tanking right now. They're trying to up their draft stock, trying to land somewhere in the top five, hopefully top six. That's what they're hoping for. But when they traded away DeMarcus Cousins, they also hoping to land another top 10 pick, or at least a lottery pick with the New Orleans Pelicans pick. But the Pelicans keep losing. And at some point, there's a growing question mark is, are the Pelicans just going to give up at some point and start tanking to try and get that top three pick? That's always interesting to me. I always say right now, this has been my mindset on the Kings, is whatever can go wrong will go wrong. The Kings are Murphy's Law. I still have this situation in the back of my head where the Kings go into this lottery leaving without a pick in their hand. I know it's not going to happen, but I just see it happening. I don't know what they're going to do, but that's what's going to happen.
That would be the most wild scenario. I would feel, I already kind of feel bad for you guys, but I would feel just devastated. So what's that scenario? The Pelicans pick lands in the top three and you guys win enough games to get outside of the top 10, right? Is that right?
Yeah, they're gonna beat the Spurs tonight. And then they're gonna just go on a winning streak, and Tyreke Evans is gonna start being the old 25-5 guy of old. And yeah, they're going to start winning these games. Their schedule gets easier, and they're going to land outside the top 10, and the Pelicans are going to say screw it, and they're going to land in the top three. They're going to get Lonzo Ball. I've predicted it. They're going to let Jrue Holiday walk. He's going to go back to Philly, and the Kings are going to be left with nothing in their hands because now even their player that they traded for last year, Bogdanovich, is questionable on if he's even going to come overseas to the team next year. So That's a whole different situation that I don't really want to get into, because I think that's a podcast in itself, because there's goods and bads and pros and cons and all that stuff. But I'm a pessimist right now, only because we're talking about the draft and I need your help, because again, the Kings as of right now, they're projected right around six or seven at that time. And I only have really two players in my mind, and I want to get your thoughts on them. And then I want to get your thoughts on other players that are projected to be around that area that you think could either possibly be better than these two players, or players that you already just have ranked ahead of them because of how you've been watching and who you've been talking to. But first off, I'm going to go with De'Aaron Fox. I think De'Aaron Fox is the point guard of the future for this team. I love the way he plays. My only issue with him right now, and I'm watching him in Kentucky, is that he looks like he has only just one go-to move to get past the player. He really relies on his speed and lateral quickness to get to the basket, but I feel his vision, the fact that he is a capable scorer, makes him a little bit of a mixture of a John Wall, Dennis Schroeder. If they had a baby, it would be De'Aaron Fox. And the other one is Jonathan Isaac, and I just love the way he plays. I just think that there's a lot of growth and potential in there. He is skinny. His defense is going to be questionable at the next level, but the guy can score. He's tall. He can put the ball on the floor. He can play both three and the four. So those are two guys that I think both fill needs for the Kings, and also have the talent to be the future of the Kings. So what are your thoughts on those two players?
I'm glad that you brought up De'Aaron Fox. He's somebody that I at least have a very entertaining opinion on. He's the kind of player that I think that screams stay away. Tons of red flags. We can just start from the top. Obviously, the biggest problem is the shooting. Mm-hmm. Best case scenario, the best non-shooting point guard in the NBA is Ricky Rubio. Probably like the most underrated player over the past like 5 years or so. One of the best defenders at the point of attack, and obviously he has amazing vision, right? Like top five percentile vision, and he can be productive without that shot, just hunting assists and working in the pick and roll and being a super high level defender. While De'Aaron Fox is billed as a high level defender, I think he's pretty far from that right now. There's a lot of little mistakes that he makes. His footwork is fairly poor, but it's mostly decisions about going over and under screens. It's mostly decisions about getting too tight on guys. And also the strength thing is a problem. Obviously that's difficult to project. His frame is super narrow, and I worry that he'll never be able to add the necessary strength to really hold stronger point guards from driving past him, even though he is quicker. It's so difficult at the point of attack to stay in front of people. Like, the rules in the NBA are stacked against you. So strength, actually, if you look at the top perimeter players, they don't have necessarily all of them have the lightning quickness. A lot of them have a combination of adequate quickness and strength. So I'm worried about his defense. Although he'll probably be fine there, like average. And then the offense, the shooting is like probably his biggest weakness, pretty glaring. He's taken like, I think, less than like 50 threes on the year, really shies away from that shot. The form is a little wonky. I mean, I'm not a shot doctor or anything, but I don't think he's ever really going to come around as a 3-point shooter.
It's and driving as Rondo, to the though. I mean, I'll say that his shot doesn't look as bad as Rondo's.
Okay, that's true, but that's not a very high bar, right? So driving to the rim, he's super quick, but he can go left or right, but he's really predictable there. And the passing, I think, is just okay. Like, for a point guard, it's just okay. He doesn't have I don't think great vision. He doesn't have a ton of creativity in his passes. He's a little bit allergic to the bounce pass for some reason. Everything's a chest pass to him. I think the situation in at Kentucky right now is really great for him, because they push the pace where he excels, right? Because he's so lightning quick, and his top end speed is maybe the fastest in college basketball right now. So he can be really productive and just making sound decisions, which he does pretty well. But a lot of like the higher level skills that will make you like a above average starting player in the NBA, potentially an all-star player in the NBA, I don't think he's shown almost any of those. So, he came in with a lot of hype, and he has the athleticism to project to maybe reach that ceiling, but all the other indicators say that he's not going to get there. So you could bet on him, right? And it might pay off really high, but I personally wouldn't draft him until probably after the lottery. And then, you can respond to what I said there if you want.
I'm a huge fan of De'Aaron Fox. That's the only thing I'm going to say. I want to get your thoughts on Jonathan Isaac now, because it looks like his draft stock is kind of going up a little bit. Tell me what you love about him, or tell me what you hate. I'm excited. Let's go.
Well, Jonathan Isaac, I think he's perfect for you guys. I think if he gets to, so let's say you have like picks 6 and 7, if he gets to you, I would be really excited for you guys. Somebody with a really, really high defensive floor. I think pairing him with Willie Cauley-Stein for the future could potentially be like an all NBA level like backcourt, like really, really great defensive kind of baseline to sit at. Really good at protecting the rim, really, really long, early in the year, and also, you know, later as things kind of progressed, his coach was trusting him a lot with guarding even some of the best guards on the other team in late game isolation situations. And while, you know, he's a freshman, so he makes some mistakes, his footwork is pretty good already. His length is such that if he gets beat even by like a half step or so, he can still reach and do the LeBron famous chase down block style kind of thing. Bothers a lot of people that way. Just really high steal and block numbers. Offensively, he shot it well from three. Now in the NBA, his shot doesn't look super, super pure, right? There's a lot of indicators that says that maybe this shot isn't for real, but just purely percentage wise, he shoots it pretty well. I think just below like 38% or just below 39% or something, which is obviously very good. And, but there's not a lot else to like offensively besides the fact that he makes decent decisions. He doesn't try to force things that aren't there. So if you get somebody that you can stick in the corner with Willie Cauley-Stein, patrolling the middle on offense, someone that can swing the ball, make decent decisions, and then someone who's lights out stud on defense, like, that's a really great prospect. And then there is a tiny bit of upside, I think, for a little bit more on offense, a little bit more creation. He's athletic, nimble guy for being so long. So, you know, maybe he develops that later, a little bit of creation. Right now, you don't see that, but I think he would be great for you guys.
I'm going to bring up another pairing here, point guard and wing as well. The point guard, I actually really – he's my favorite point guard probably in this draft away from De'Aaron Fox. And the only reason why I like De'Aaron Fox is because I have seen the jumper. I do know his jump shot is very questionable on if it can ever get better, but it doesn't look terrible, and that's just my opinion. Again, I'm not no shot doctor either. But this point guard, I don't think he's going to be around when the Kings are able to draft. I think once draft time comes around, his stock is going to start continuing to build because of how good of a player I think he really can be. But as of right now, I believe over his last two games, he has been playing very well, especially against in his most recent one, his last game, I think he only got like 8 points. But that is Dennis Smith. And I think he's athletic. He's great in the pick and roll. He has a decent sized vision for his height. I believe he's like 6'1", 6'2". But I mean, he's super athletic. I think there was a comparison, and if he can be anything like this player, he was one of my favorite players in the league. But I hope he can be better than him. But his comparison right now is Baron Davis. I hope he can be better than Baron Davis. But people can't forget how good Baron Davis used to be. I was a huge fan of Baron Davis when he used to play. But that's the point guard. That's the point guard I want to bring up, and then the other forward that I want to bring up, who I'm actually not a huge fan of, and I'll be very interested to see if you actually enjoy his play. And I was just watching him earlier today, and that's Jason Tatum. I don't really find his game translating over to the NBA level very well. I don't think he's that offensively polished as most people think he is. I think he relies definitely on his NBA body to be something. And as a rebounder, I think he's good at a college level, and I think it'll be questionable at the NBA level to where he'll just be that tweener, and he can either become a Marvin Williams or he'll become a Derek Williams. And I think it's going to be between the two of those. So what are your thoughts on Dennis Smith? Do you think he could be available for the Kings? And would you take him if you're the Kings? Then the same thing going for Jason Tatum.
So Dennis Smith Jr., I don't think that he will be available for you guys. You know, if you're not able to jump up a little higher than you are. But if I personally would draft him around the range that you're thinking about, 6 or 7, I'm a little bit lower on him than most people are. But if he gets down to you guys, I think he's a fine pick. I think it's definitely more of an upside pick. Again, like De'Aaron Fox, there are quite a few red flags. Defensively, he's just kind of a no-show most games, although he's super athletic. He gives a lot of that like fake hustle stuff, jumping passing lanes, you know, going for kind of like the highlight defensive stuff. But just as far as like being sound, staying in front of your defender off the ball, watching man and ball, helping out on rebounds and that kind of thing, he's not very good at all. Offensively, his strength definitely lies in the pick and roll and getting to the rim. His shot is I think fine. Like, he'll be a fine 3-point shooter, I think. Definitely better than De'Aaron Fox. But as far as just passing in general, I think his vision is pretty limited, and also just his execution of passes is pretty poor. Actually, when you line him up with Fultz, with Ball, even Josh Jackson, who a lot of times he's not a point guard, but he initiates some of the offense at Kansas during their sets, with Frank Ntilikina and De'Aaron Fox, even Malik Monk, throw him in there. I think he's probably the worst just pure passer of all of those guys. He makes a lot of the right reads in certain sets, high ball screen. That's kind of his bread and butter. He makes a lot of good reads, but just the execution of the pass is bad. Obviously these things can be corrected, but it's just little things that show he's mostly just athletic and can get to the rim, which is fine. Like, I think this is he's a fine lottery ticket, right? If he absolutely pans out and a lot of the intangible question marks are met and are overcome, then he could be great, right? Chosen around like the 7th pick or the 6th pick or whatever. And then quickly getting over to the forward that you mentioned. Sorry, who was that? Jason Tatum. Yeah. I'm a little bit higher on Jason Tatum, I think, than you are, but I think you're spot on in saying that his range of outcomes is pretty broad. He could be the kind of scorer that he was billed as coming in. He definitely showed elite level skill and footwork. A little bit like, although I'm not a huge comparison guy, but Harrison Barnes coming in, and even after spending a few years at UNC and coming out into the NBA, super high level skill guy, but it doesn't always translate to the efficiency that you'd like. shows flashes of passing. He obviously, like you said, has an NBA body already. The length, the strength is already there. The real problem, I think, with Jason Tatum is that he's being forced for the first time to stretch his game out to three. He's being pushed in ways on this Duke team that he hasn't really played almost his whole life. I think that the passing can be there. There are flashes of the passing. I think that he can be a ball mover, but that's a little bit of a leap of faith. That's one of those like flashes that you see that may or may not develop, and you're taking kind of a big risk. And then the other thing is that he's not much of an explosive athlete. He's a super fluid, coordinated guy at 6'8". Will give you all the skill that you could want with that size and at that position. But as far as just like explosion, his first step is fine. But once he gets at the rim, off of 1 foot or 2 foot, he's not going to, you know, sky over guys. He's not going to get up and have a lot of hang time to do some creative finishing. He gets blocked actually a lot more than you'd think. And then on defense, it hurts him a little bit in defensive rebounding and protecting the rim. Although, you know, playing the three or the four, that's not the worst thing in the world, but there are some, I think, athletic ceiling limitations there. But he's definitely interesting, and if he falls to you at 6 or 7, I think also that's probably a good pick.
Quickly here, just on my last double pairing, then we're going to kind of get to some March Madness conversation here a little bit. Malik Monk, Frank Ntilikina, I know the European player. I don't know if you talk too much about the European players on your show, but what are your thoughts on Malik Monk? Because, I mean, for me, I feel like he's the Kings' favorite player only because he's a guy who can shoot the basketball. And then also with Frank Ntilikina, I mean, he's an overseas guy. He's a point guard. There's a lot of hype behind him right now. Do you see the Kings looking at him at all, and what are your just thoughts on those players in general?
So I've had quite a few European guests on, and I do. I watch quite a few of those games actually myself, and Frank Ntilikina is somebody that I'm really high on compared to a lot of my peers. I actually have him ranked kind of fourth or fifth right now, kind of on that same level with Jonathan Isaac. I think if he falls to you guys, I think he's a perfect fit there. Not that you have a ton of young building blocks that you definitely want to keep. Obviously, you have talent dearth maybe at every position besides maybe Willie Cauley-Stein going forward. But I think that he's a great pick, somebody that can fit in almost any system, any style. He is by far, I think, the best perimeter defender in the draft, bar none.
Wow.
Not only is he super long, like 7 foot wingspan, something like that. He technically is so sound. He doesn't have the lightning quick De'Aaron Fox lateral quickness that you kind of want in your stereotypical perimeter defender, but just as intelligent wise and understanding what he's doing, he navigates screens better than anybody at his age that I've seen. And he's also one of the youngest kids in the draft. He's been dominating FIBA events since going back a couple years, since he was like 16 years old. I'm really, really high on him. Obviously, the problem comes with offensive creation. He's a spot-up shooter, and he's an okay decision-making passer in the right situation. The kind of creation that the NBA expects from the point guard position right now, he doesn't have. He's not a great off-the-dribble shooter. Because of his super long arms, his shot's a little slow. But he's definitely interesting, and I think that those parts of his games can develop. I think there's enough flashes there that where you can say, let's take this kid for all the stuff that he has right now at 18, for the physical freak that he is, for the length that he has, and let's put some of those offensive things on his shoulders and see if he can produce like he has been producing all these FIBA matches, you know, where he's playing guys his own age. Because right now he's playing professionally in France. You know, he's playing grown men. And then the other guy, Malik Monk, yeah, he is everybody's darling right now, putting up insane numbers, has some of the best YouTube mixes, right, of anybody. Obviously has a really, really versatile shot, can get it off in many ways, like a JJ Redick, you know, like a Ray Allen, running off screens, can do it in the pull-up, can do it in transition. I'm a little bit lower on him than most people. I have him at about like 7 or 8 right now, and maybe even lower than that. I think defensively, he's going to give you a lot of problems. I think he's probably a stay away for you guys at around, you know, that 6, 7, 8 range.
Yeah, I'm like you. I'm not a huge fan of Malik Monk, but I get how a lot of people are going to fall in love with him. Because like you said, he's everyone's college player darling right now. Everyone loves his YouTube highlights. You know, we're wrapping it up here, but I definitely want to get your final thoughts on March Madness and just, one, the environment, but two, who are some players that you think are going to be making leaps up in on draft boards? Maybe they haven't heard about them yet, and they're just outside of the lottery, or maybe they're in the lottery and they're starting to make their way up to maybe they could be a top 10 pick. Are there any players that are in your mind off the top of your head right now that you think can fall into that category for you and who you're going to be keeping a close eye on during the March Madness tournament?
Yeah. Two guys that come to mind right away that are kind of in this category. Two guys that might not declare for the draft, but definitely would be interesting to keep your eye on, like you said, as you're watching March Madness. One plays for probably a number one seeded Gonzaga. His name is Zach Collins. He is a freshman big. He's about 6'11"-ish, has a pretty good wingspan. There aren't great measurements for him. But he, because Gonzaga is so deep right now, he doesn't get a ton of minutes. But right now he plays the four because Gonzaga has a couple of great bigs or whatever. So he's usually playing at the four, but I think his natural position will be at the five. He's a really, really fluid athlete. He shows all the indicators that he'll be able to shoot, you know, a long two, maybe a three, or like the corner three at the NBA level. And he has a lot of like the athletic tools, the smoothness, the elite second jump, the perimeter ability, kind of like a Willie Cauley-Stein, not at that athletic level, but somebody who's really, really interesting and fits the modern NBA game really well. Kind of the pick and dive big, right? The who you throw all the lobs to. Really, really interesting. Zach Collins. And then the other guy who is a sophomore for actually the team that won it all last year, Villanova, McCall Bridges, somebody who amongst like the draft nerd circles, they have been trying to get me on this McCall Bridges bandwagon for a long time. And just recently, in preparation for a podcast that I'll be doing later, I've been watching a lot of him, and he's definitely really intriguing. He has an interesting statistical profile. He doesn't have a high usage percentage. Like you would think most of the role players in the NBA were stars in college, right? And they took a lot of shots, right? High usage stuff, 25%, 23%, whatever. But McCall Bridges has a super low usage percentage. I don't know what it is, but it's crazy low, and that's like a little bit concerning. But he plays with a lot of other guys, and I think situationally you can kind of excuse that. But he, I think, along with Nil Aquina, probably is battling for that best perimeter defender. All the physical gifts that you could want. He's going to be able to guard probably 1-3 pretty comfortably. I think he stands like 6'6"-ish, I think, around there. He already has more strength than Nil Aquina does, probably. And offensively, he can shoot the spot up Jay, so like the perfect 3-and-D prospect, right? And then he can also attack a closeout really well. If you close out too hard on him, and can finish at the rim a lot better than I originally thought. I thought he was kind of just predictable and had a couple things at the rim, but no, his athleticism really shines through there actually. So he doesn't take as many shots as you'd like him to, but he plays within himself really well. Great 3-and-D prospect, I think.
Tournament's coming close. What? I mean, I've never made it out of the first round with my brackets, but I have predicted the winner before once the finals were made. I've never actually made like the correct prediction beforehand. I wish I did, but I never did that. But who do you think's winning it all?
I have no idea. Let's go Villanova back to back. Why not?
I'm going Gonzaga just because you said that they're the number one seeded team.
Okay.
That's the only reason why. You know, but I'm not going to lie to you, though. I mean, I think it's always more fun to see Kentucky making it far. Like, I just love when the news outlet covers them. I think that they're going to be interesting. And plus, you get to get that deeper look at De'Aaron Fox. And I think this is going to be a high-pressure situation for his draft stock, only because you're going to have to see him elevate his game, right? He's going to have to overcome his non-shooting ability. I couldn't think of the word I was looking for, but his inability to shoot down the jumper. I think he's down to one good crossover to get past a lot of his players, which I think is going to show up in this March Madness tournament. And I really want to keep an eye on him for Kings fans. And then I want to see what Jonathan Isaac can do. I think he's going to definitely be a prospect to keep an eye on throughout this entire tournament. But it looks like our time has run up here, Sean. I definitely want to thank you for joining the show. But before we let you go, where can the fans find you online, and how can they start listening to your podcast?
Well, obviously I'm part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so you can find me on their feed, but Ode to Odin, the NBA Draft podcast, you can find on Blog Talk Radio. You can find it on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Ode to Odin. And then there's a website where I'm starting to put draft articles I really like, some podcasts that I really like about that kind of stuff. So if you want smart draft material to read, to kind of look at as stuff approaches, if you're not maybe if you're a Kings fan, obviously, and you're not too concerned about the playoffs, you can go to odetoodin.com and look at my suggestions there.
And what was that Twitter handle one more time?
At Ode to Odin.
At Ode to Odin. Follow him on Twitter. Check out the podcast. It's part of the ABPN network over there. You guys can follow me on all social media platforms of at VM Center. Do us a huge favor, guys. Give us a thumbs up on this episode so we know that you guys listen. And if you have the time, since you already hit that button, go down to the bottom and start leaving us a comment on iTunes so we can continue going up the iTunes charts. Do the same for the Ode to Odin podcast. Great stuff going on there every single week. I love listening to college basketball. You guys definitely go check them out. Sean, thank you once again for joining the show. You guys bookmark the site at kingsnation.com. And good luck, Kings. They're playing the Spurs. No Kawhi Leonard. No LaMarcus Aldridge tonight. Can they win? Sean says,
sure, why not?
Hey. Until next time, Sacramento Kings fan. Bye-bye.